The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, life after death. You'll hear great thinkers on these subjects and more on the Paranormal Podcast, the longest running podcast of its type. I'm Jim Harold, and I invite you to join me as we explore the mysteries of life. I bet you love these topics just as much as I do, but don't worry, I won't tell anyone. Join me for some great paranormal conversation. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Podcast listeners, we have a new show sure to become your next obsession. It's called Secret Societies, and it gives you a glimpse inside the world of assassin groups, powerful cabals, and debaucherous high society clubs. Every Thursday, hosts Greg and Vanessa help you discover the diabolical beliefs and radical actions you were never supposed to know about. I tell you more, but I'll just let this exclusive clip from the first episode on Yale's mysterious Skull and Bones fraternity fill you in. If you want to listen to the full episode, follow Secret Societies free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something to note about secret societies. All of the groups covered on this show operate in secret. The details included in this episode are based on extensive research, but ultimately can never be 100% verified, except by society members themselves. For every kernel of truth, there's a swath of misinformation, strategically crafted by each group to protect their true goals and practices.
In April of 1966, sophomore student Ron Rosenbaum walked home to his Yale dorm with his friend Mike. It was the middle of the night, after 2 a.m.
When they passed the Skull and Bones tomb, a looming, windowless structure, Mike suddenly stopped. He grabbed Ron's arm and pointed to the front door. Something sat on the doorstep, a white baton in the gloomy darkness.
It was a long bone. A femur, probably. Ron, who was already turned off by the Skull and Bones death cult, took a step back and whispered to Mike, "Come on, let's just go."
To his horror, Mike bounded up the tomb's steps and scooped up the white bone. Then he stepped even closer to inspect the triple padlock on the front door. Ron felt every hair stand up on the back of his neck. He called out again, "Mike, don't."
Suddenly, the triple padlocks click, click, clicked. The iron door opened, and a hand shot out from the darkness. It wrenched the bone out of Mike's grasp, then disappeared just as quickly. The heavy door slammed shut, and the locks clicked back into place.
Still caught in a confusing cocktail of fight or flight, Mike slowly retreated back down the steps. Ron just shook his head, too flustered to speak, too overwhelmed for an "I told you so." Neither was quite sure what they'd intruded on, just that it was a secret, one they would never be invited to understand.
One that Ron Rosenbaum would spend the rest of his life trying to expose.
Hi. Hi, I'm Vanessa Richardson.
And I'm Greg Polson.
And this is Secret Societies, a Parcast original. Every Thursday, we examine history's most exclusive organizations from around the world and try to shine a light on the truth behind these mysterious groups. From the Illuminati to the Black Hand to the Order of the Nine Angles, we'll explore how much impact each secret society actually had on the world around them.
In our first episode, we'll give you the facts, at least all the facts we can verify. Why each group was founded, how they recruited new members, their initiation rituals, and the secret meaning behind their symbols, known only to the loyal.
In part two, we'll examine some of the alleged actions of each group. We'll try to parse what's real from what's rumor as we explore some of the most popular theories surrounding each secret society.
Today, we're taking a deep dive into the Skull and Bone Society, founded at Yale University in 1832. Previous members include titans of industry, business elite, and world political leaders, including three U.S. presidents.
With such a distinguished membership list, many believe that the Skull and Bone Society is committed to creating a new world order through a vast connection of well-placed bonesmen. We'll explore this next week, as well as some of the other theories about their actions, such as their alleged involvement in the creation of the CIA.
The Skull and Bones are unique from more conventional secret societies. The rest of these groups, your Illuminatis, your Freemasons, your Triads, are forced to operate in the shadows because of their high-stakes, supposedly world-altering agendas.
But the Skull and Bones, on the surface, they're just a group of college kids, basically a fraternity. So where do these accusations of attempted world domination come from?
It has more to do with what bonesmen do after they leave Yale. Bonesmen have infiltrated the financial sector, mass media, higher education, public policy think tanks, business industry, and all three branches of the U.S. government. When you examine the roster of Skull and Bones, you'll find that members come from some of the oldest, wealthiest families in the nation and go on to fill some of the most prominent public roles of power.
As Dr. Anthony C. Sutton, author of America's Secret Establishment, questioned, they swear to take care of each other's interests, and they do it. That in the normal conduct of life is probably okay, but when one of them becomes the president of the United States, it's time to ask questions. What have you sworn to do for your brothers?
If the members of the Skull and Bones are trying to implement some kind of vast conspiracy, they're certainly well-placed to do so. They could ostensibly identify an issue in the business sector, devise a piece of public policy legislation, lobby it through the government, then spin their own reporting through the news media. Through the chain of bonesmen, every area could be connected.
But is it all just coincidence? Members insist that if bonesmen are well-positioned in the world after graduation, it simply means that they inducted the best candidates Yale had to offer, men who were already destined for greatness.
Then why keep everything shrouded in secrecy? Bonesmen won't publicly acknowledge their membership, which is lifelong, and are supposed to leave the room if someone so much as mentions the group. They won't reveal to anyone what goes on in their headquarters, and non-members are strictly forbidden from entering their tomb. And some people believe that their impenetrable Iron Curtain is a safety measure to protect their true goals from public knowledge.
However, that portion of the Bones mythos might actually be explained by Yale's own history.
Today, there are several secret societies at Yale, though Skull and Bones is the oldest and, arguably, the most storied. All of these societies emerged out of the school's long history of organized elitism and rigid culture of classism.
In 1701, Yale College was the third university established in the United States. It was initially founded as a ministerial school tasked with training ministers for the state of Connecticut, who would then serve as the moral leaders of their communities.
At the time, the only other ministerial school in New England was Harvard. But a group of Puritan leaders felt that the education style there was becoming too modern and straying too far from the orthodoxy. So they founded Yale as a more traditional, conservative institution.
Yale men were therefore expected to follow strict guidelines of conduct. They were forbidden from leaving their dorm rooms without proper attire, from speaking to a superior without first being spoken to, from running in the quad. The list goes on and on.
The students were also bound by a rigid social hierarchy. As Alexandra Robbins detailed in her book on the Skull and Bones, Secrets of the Tomb, students were ranked by their social cache, not their academic performance. She explained, students at the top of the class had fathers who held high civil office. At the bottom were sons of farmers, merchants, mariners, and artisans.
This ranking determined every aspect of a student's life at Yale, from where they sat in class to where they were housed and what order they were announced at graduation. It was predetermined before a student stepped foot on campus and was nearly impossible to improve.
Beyond that, all freshmen were seen as the lowest of the low, with the most rules to follow. They couldn't wear hats or carry canes, both status symbols at the time. They couldn't address senior students by any kind of familiar name, only as sir.
This rigid caste system encouraged rampant hazing on campus, referred to as trimming. The upperclassmen believed it was their duty to improve the lowly freshmen and mold them into proper Yale men. Any freshman found in violation of any rule could be trimmed by an upperclassman in any manner that they deemed fit.
And the university approved of trimming until the mid-1800s, seeing it as an effective method of enforcing their strict code of conduct. One administrator said that if trimming was abolished, the new freshmen would subject the higher classes to constant scurrility, lessen their manhood and dignity, reduce all to an equal rudeness, and render Yale a mere common school.
Of course, as with any hazing practice, this power was often abused. In one story, a freshman was reportedly dragged from his dorm and out into the woods, stripped naked, covered in paint, and forced to have his head shaved.
In this culture of fear and systemic oppression, low-ranking students looked for opportunities to distinguish themselves academically, thereby engendering some loyalty, respect, and ideally, protection from the upperclassmen. In the late 1700s, students found these opportunities in literary societies.
These open groups held weekly meetings. Students gave speeches, recited poems, performed plays, and debated topics of the day.
But over time, the campus was overrun by these societies. Nearly every student was a member of at least one. They lost any feeling of specialness. If anyone could join, what was the point?
So some of the groups went underground, forming the first secret societies at Yale. By limiting the membership, it gave students a place to establish themselves as even farther above Yale's elite students, the elite of the elite.
These secret clubs were undoubtedly inspired by other real secret societies of the era. Groups like the Illuminati and Freemasons were well known in the United States. But as we said earlier, the secret nature of these groups was born out of necessity to their cause.
This wasn't the case at all at Yale. Their secrecy was motivated by elitism. Sociologist George Simmel wrote extensively about secret keeping and secret societies. He found that secrets tap into a primal human need for information. If something is being kept a secret, it subconsciously indicates to us that the information is valuable. Therefore, the secret keepers are in possession of something worthy of coveting.
Yale's secret societies, which were really no more than study groups with a secret handshake, manufactured value by operating in secret. The secret societies quickly overtook all other groups in prestige, simply by closing their doors and shuttering their blinds. Being in on the secret became the new indicator of your social status.
But in 1826, public opinion of secret societies in America dramatically turned with the kidnapping and alleged murder of a man named William Morgan. He threatened to expose the rituals and secrets of the Freemasons in a book after he was denied entry at his local Masonic lodge. Soon after the announcement, he vanished. The public assumed that members of the Freemasons killed Morgan to keep him quiet.
As the story gained traction, Morgan's publisher decided to go ahead with the release of the book, exposing the Mason secrets. The best-selling book, combined with Morgan's death, sparked a widespread anti-Masonic sentiment. Lodges all over New England were shuttered. In 1828, the Anti-Masonic Party was founded as the first single-issue third-party political faction in the U.S.
By 1832, this outrage trickled down to the collegiate level. The Yale administration singled out the most popular and most exclusive secret society on campus, Phi Beta Kappa.
They forced PBK to reveal their membership lists, their ritual practices, and the meanings behind their symbols.
Like the unmasking of the great and powerful Oz, when the mystery behind the group was stripped away, so was their prestige. For several years, PBK disappeared entirely from Yale's campus.
And in this vacuum, the Skull and Bone Society was born. In short order, it became the most influential organization on campus.
To find out what happens next, listen to Secret Societies free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.